and welcome to Alzheimer Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and I'm so excited that you're joining us today. We are going to have a fascinating conversation, as usual, as we learn from people all around the world at all ages and stages of life. Stay tuned as we shift our dementia care from crisis to comfort.
Here we go. What you think about?
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks Open Mic. I never know who's going to show up, and so this is kind of a go-with-the-flow type time. Anything dementia and caregiving related is welcome. So if you have a service, product, or tool, if you have a situation you're looking to troubleshoot, or something that you found that works really well, or something you think needs to be developed, everything can be talked about here. So before I see who's in our waiting room, I just thought I would. mention that the only one rule that we have here is that we have a respectful conversation. And we haven't had a problem with that yet. So and I would also like to mention that I would encourage people to go check out all of our free resources at alzheimerspeaks.com. We actually have a tab named that, Free Educational Resources. And let's go see who's with us today. Okay. Oh, and I also want to note that Dementia Map, our global, And I also wanted to mention that Dementia Map, our global resource directory, you can sign up for free if you've got a service, product, or tool that you want people to know about. But if you want to do one of our upgraded plans, we have a pro plan that's $365 a year and a featured, which is $800 a year. You can get 20% off on that. Just reach out to me and I'll tell you all about it. So let's go to the waiting room and see who's here. Well, welcome, Steve and True, to the show today. I'm anxious to hear what you want to talk about. So, Steve, I'm going to have you go first and just introduce yourself and what topic, I'll have to edit this out, and what topic you'd like to talk about.
Again, my name, like it says on the screen, is Stephen Barbieri. I live in Ohio. I was diagnosed with CTE dementia almost 12 years ago now. That wasn't the original diagnosis. I think like a lot of us, it was staggering effect. It started with mild cognitive impairment, went to pseudo dementia, frontal temporal lobe dementia, just a lot of different things before they finally arrived on the CT dementia after I did an 8-hour interview with a neuropsychologist. So it took a little bit more testing and just asking the right questions to get a proper, hopefully proper diagnosis.
So a lot of people don't know what CTE is and how you get it, because it's a little bit different than some of the others that we've heard about.
I'll try and pronounce it as chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So they actually made a movie sort of about this. I think it was 2012 with Will Smith called Concussion. So basically it comes from people with concussions. The movie was mainly about the Steelers football team at, way back. I can't remember what era that was in, where all these football players were having these side effects from playing football all their careers, from high school to college into the professionals. And they were getting ill and they weren't getting properly diagnosed. And until Dr. I can't remember his name, Amalu or something like that, discovered the CTE, where they found the tau proteins in the buildup in the brain. So CTE dementia is caused by numerous concussions over time. It could be one, it could be several, and it could take several years to actually show up. I did martial arts for 45 years, so a lot of, you know, kicks to the head as well as kicking other people to the head. I got in a car accident. I got a scar here from when I was younger, falling off a swing. I hit my head on a diving board, just different accidents over time. Like I said, I was diagnosed at the age of 51. I'm presently 64. The sad thing about it is if you do any research about CT dementia, there's just not enough information. The worst one is that if you look up CT dementia life expectancy, they'll tell you it's age 55. Well, I'm going to be turning 64 because what it was most of these football players, starting it when they were doing it in high school and then college and then in the pros. So it was a very short research group. I think it was less than 100 people, and they came out with that average. So when I was first diagnosed, it was kind of scary, and plus they were saying 6 to 8 years. So here when I had my 10-year anniversary, we actually had a big party. We had a cake and 10 candles, and we had a bunch of people over, and we did a big celebration because for me to have reached 10 years was a big milestone, especially for somebody with CTE. And the scariest part, if you did go to see the movie, I thought, oh, this is a great movie. It's going to explain it to. I don't know all about it because I was early, just diagnosed the year before, took my wife and my three kids to it. Well, all the football players in the movie died by suicide, which is one of the number one side effects of my type of CTE, their suicidal tendencies. So it wasn't a great movie when we left. Dad, you're not going to do this. And I'm like, oh my God, what did I get myself into? I didn't, which was good to understand it, but it was bad to have, like I said, our three younger children and my wife there. But it was a rude awakening at the same time. So I actually have to be very careful. So if a doctor ever prescribes a medication, I have to make sure I look at it because I've actually had a doctor prescribe a medication where the number one side effect at the top was suicidal tendencies. And I'm like, so wait a sec. My dementia makes me lean this way, and you're giving me a medication, and the number one side effect at the top is a suicidal tendency. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to take this mood adjusting pill or whatnot and stuff. So again, we have to be our own best advocates because even though it was prescribed by our neurologist, I actually had to catch her on that.
Well, and that's very common. Just like you were talking about how many different diagnoses you got before you got the CTE diagnosis. I actually was out speaking and at conferences, and I watched Concussion, and I was so angry. I watched it like 3 times. I was livid that they kept this under wraps. And how hard this doctor was trying to bring things to light. So even though it does show suicidal tendencies, like any dementia, everybody's a little bit different, you know. Excuse me. But I do think it's a very, very powerful show. And can even with the suicidal tendencies, it'll show families some of the beginning signs that are overlooked, that need to be looked at more seriously.
Because a lot of in the movie, a lot of the families of the football players were thinking, he's just being an idiot. He's being a bad parent. He's being a bad father. He's being a bad husband because they didn't get the diagnosis. They didn't know what was going on. They just thought he would, they were very, just angry people is what it was.
And like you mentioned with the medication, you know, people living with Lewy body go through the same thing with their hallucinations and stuff. And so a lot of times the doctors don't have all the inside information. I always recommend people ask their pharmacist to review their medication, any new one, and go, okay, what's it going to do with what I have and all the other stuff I've taken, you know, beforehand. And to me, I think that's one of the safest modes, but everybody does it a little different. But I think it is really important that you educated the doctor on that. And I'm sure some doctors don't like that, but tough noogies, you know, it needs to be said and they need to know. So what I'm going to go to True and just have her introduce herself, and then I'm going to go back to you, Steve, and we'll talk on your topic. So True, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
My full legal name is Truthful Loving Kindness, and my current diagnosis is still mild cognitive impairment with Lewy body symptoms and cerebrovascular disease.
which still amazes me that they have that mild cognitive impairment with you.
I'm supposed to see another specialist next month.
Yeah, it is frustrating out there. And so just a reminder to everyone is, you know, if it doesn't feel like a good fit, you get a second opinion. But it is extremely common that it can take years to get a proper diagnosis. And as True had mentioned, you can have multiple types of dementias as well. And it can change over time. It might look like something, but, you know, this is a baby disease. It's only been around about 100 years. They're finally figuring out, I think, really much more so that dementia is different in every single person. And so it isn't this little checklist of, boom, you have this. And typically you're going to go through, no, you are depressed. No, you're going through midlife crisis. I mean, we have so many people that's what the doctors kind of treat first. And then all of a sudden, oh, I guess that's not helping and stuff. So you really do have to be an advocate. It is, I think, really important to connect with others actually living with the disease. I think you'll learn so, so much from them. Oh, go ahead, Drew.
And I think one of the key things for me, since they've had such a hard time with diagnosis, because I have so many strengths still, you know, my what do you call it? It doesn't matter. Anyway, that the deficits and the strengths are so, so very far apart that it is confusing. And that's what the last neurologist says, you know, I don't know what to do. And this is after a lot of years.
Which isn't overly comforting, to say the least. But, you know, it is nice to hear that them admit that they don't know versus arguing with you when you know this isn't really fitting compared to what others are, you know, are telling me it is. I don't know if we'll ever really know. I think it's going to be like cancer, you know. And when cancer came out there, it was like one cancer. And then it's like, oh, but there's this kind of cancer and there's that kind of cancer. And now we have to have all these different treatment modes. And I think we're just kind of getting our feet in this industry and settling down to go, okay, there really is a lot of different types. We can do a major broad campaign, but we have to get the spokes in the wheel out so people know all the different variables. And even with these variables, everybody's going to be a little bit different, even within that.
And I am, what I started to say was that I'm very glad that right to start with, I went to the psychiatrist, which was suggested because of my extreme, because of the hallucinations and stuff. And he said, well, he said, it can be very subtle. So this is likely to take a while to be sure that there isn't a psychiatric underlying to the cause. And 3 years later, he wrote the letter.
Okay. Steve, let's go back up to you. Is there a topic that you'd like to discuss? And again, anything is fair game. It can be a product, a service, a tool, an organization, a situation, you know, a story you want to share, something you found that works well. So again, we're open to everything on the show.
Well, I wanted to piggyback on something that you're talking about when you were talking about cancer. So you hear so many people being diagnosed with cancer. Anytime a doctor says, you know, I'm sorry to let you know that you have cancer, the next response is, what type of cancer? A doctor is never going to just say you have cancer and out the room you go. But a doctor will tell you, oh, you have dementia, I'm sorry, and out the door you go. Well, that's how I got my diagnosis. I was told I had dementia by my neurologist, and I wasn't educated enough to say, well, what kind? That's like saying ice cream. Well, there's different flavors, you know, there's different types of cancer. So when I went home and did my research, my next appointment with my neurologist, I said, okay, so it looks like I'm leaning towards a diagnosis of dementia. She says, yes. I go, what type? And she was like, well, I'm really not sure yet. Maybe we should do some further testings. And because I asked that question, so every time I get on a call and I hear somebody say, well, I got a diagnosis of dementia, I try and say, well, can I ask that person a couple follow-up questions? And the leader of the call will say, sure, Stephen, what's your question? I go, is this, well, did they tell you what type? Well, what do you mean, what type? I said, well, that, and then I use a cancer scenario. So I tell people never settle for diagnosis of dementia. The doctor or neurologist is doing you a disservice because they're not giving you enough information. Because just like cancer, there's different treatments, there's different routines you should be going through versus colon cancer versus breast cancer versus lip cancer versus, all the breast cancers, all the different types. The same thing with dementia. It is important to know, even though there is no way to stop, prevent, or cure it at this moment, and a doctor can't write anything on a prescription for you, really, that you know what type so that you can kind of know what to be watching for. Like with you said, Lewy body. Well, people with Lewy body tends are going to have hallucinations. You're going to know that that's normal for that type of dementia, not like, oh my God, what's going on? Well, it's because of the disease. Frontal temporal lobe, you're going to say inappropriate things, inappropriate behavior. It's not the person acting out, it's the disease acting out. Somebody with CT dementia, hey, we got to make sure we don't leave Stephen alone for a long period of time. We've got to make sure he doesn't get depressed and he's by himself or whatever because of the suicidal tendencies. So again, do not ever accept a diagnosis where they just use the word, I believe, or you have dementia. You need to pause and look at them like, okay, what type? Because then they're going to say, oh, we're going to have to do more testings, which is where they got to me, where they finally did the PET scan and they found the damage on both sides of my temporal lobe. That's why they thought mine was frontal temporal lobe dementia. But I was showing up in a suit and a tie. I was a vice president and district manager at Wells Fargo Bank. Worked there a long time. So I was showing up in three-piece suits and ties either at lunchtime or after work for doctor's appointments until finally I went to that 8-hour appointment with a neuropsychologist. And within the first 15 or 20 minutes, he was able to diagnose me with CT dementia because he said, Stephen, tell me about your lifestyle. What do you do for fun? Well, I've done martial arts for like 45 years. Oh, really? Have you ever gotten hit? Oh, yeah, all the time. Boom, 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 boom. And then within a few minutes, he says, oh, you're very likely candidate for CT dementia. We can't tell 100% until the final test, which is an autopsy. And I say, yeah, I'm not ready for that test yet. So, but again, that's my biggest push, and that's my biggest like hot point is when people use the word dementia trying to give you a diagnosis. Don't settle for that at all. And the other hot point is that people interchange the word Alzheimer's for the word dementia. Well, there's so many different types of Alzheimer's. Well, that is true, but they're also trying to use that as the at the top of the house, like dementia. Dementia is at the top of house. Alzheimer's is a type of dementia. So you hear people all the time saying, well, the person has dementia and Alzheimer's. Well, that's kind of true, but it's important to know the difference. And I do get frustrated when people use that word interchangeably incorrect. And I believe that they need to use the word, people with dementia, because then that's more all inclusive. That includes people with Alzheimer's, frontal temporal lobe, all the different types. Because I'll use the Alzheimer's Association as an example. Nothing against them, but when I was first diagnosed, I said, "Oh, I don't have Alzheimer's. I have CTE. There's nothing they can do for me." Well, believe it or not, most people at the Alzheimer's Association don't even know their legal name, which is the Alzheimer's Association and Other Related Dementia. Everybody shortens it when they just say the name and say the Alzheimer's Association, where that's their legal 501(c) name is the Alzheimer's Association and Other Related Dementia. So it took me a while to realize, oh no, the Alzheimer's Association can help me out, even though I don't have CTE. So again, I kind of get frustrated too when people use the word Alzheimer's a lot. But again, it does account for somewhere between, they say, 65 to 80% of all cases of dementia. So I know that's the number one, but that's not the all-inclusive, phrase. The all-inclusive phrase really beset people living with dementia.
Yeah, and dementia is actually a category. It's not a disease, but Alzheimer's is a, is a pathology. Lewy body is a pathology, you know, so those things make a difference. I would be interested in knowing if the Alzheimer's Association changed their name, because I don't think it had that tag along on, you know, with the other dementias originally when it started, because I remember how they used to literally fight even using the term dementia. And then I went to one meeting and then they started using it. And I called them out on it and I said, well, what's the change here? Well, there's more than one type. And I said, I know, but you've never, ever used that term before in Minnesota.
I want to kind of pat myself on the back for that, because I was on the California board for the Alzheimer's Association. And that, again, I was one of my hot points of when I was on the board that, you know, everybody kept using the word Alzheimer's all the time and not using the word dementia. And they've actually changed their mission statement because of me and some other people on the board. And now all the Alzheimer's Association across the United States use it, where they're looking for a world without Alzheimer's and all other dementias. They added that phrase as their mission statement because of people from the California board and myself kind of pushing it, where they changed their mission statement. I think it was about, I've been here three, so somewhere about 4 or 5 years ago, they changed their mission statement to add with the phrase, a world without Alzheimer's and other related dementias.
Which is good, but I also, my skeptic side says it's also money related. It brought that, because there were a lot of other organizations popping up, you know, getting at that, scratching at that pool of funds, you know, for research and different things.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-494-8310. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-494-8310. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-494-8310.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
It's true.
I think it's also worth mentioning that, if I recall correctly, they found the majority, or, you know, more than 50%, I forget how much, of the brains that had the label Alzheimer's on them had more than one type of dementia. And that's important to consider also.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we started out, everything was Alzheimer's. I mean, dementia wasn't even a term that we used. And so everything was labeled Alzheimer's. And then once we heard more about Lewy body and FTD and vascular and CTE, a lot of the doctors were just familiar with Alzheimer's. And so that's what they're pushing. And, you know, some of that is lack of education and knowledge. Some of it is a money factor of, we want our numbers to be bigger because then we'll get more funding. I mean, that's part of business out there, if we want to admit it or not. And then you get into, you know, the different variables. I know there's a couple of states, they don't like the term dementia. And it's like, because people are demented. And my philosophy is, right, wrong, or different, my personal opinion is, stop changing the terms. Educate people on the terms, but let's stop changing the terms constantly, because that is very confusing for the public. And the lag time to get everybody on board, I mean, we could come up with, you know, it's going to be, you know, the foo-foo flower is going to be the next thing we're going to call all the dementias. And then someone's going to come up and go, I don't like that either, and blah, 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 blah. And then they're going to want to change it again. The time, the effort, and the work that goes into that, it's kind of like caregivers versus care partners versus care companions. We don't have to get rid of the word. but we can educate people that there's a better word. And this is why this, these are the whys behind it. And dementia doesn't mean demented. It's a category of a diseased brain. And that's how we're going to look at this term, you know? And, but then we have to educate people on the different types. And Steve, I loved when you called the doctor on it, and then the doctor said, oh, well, maybe we should do some more testing. And we as consumers are like thinking, well, isn't that your job? I mean, I shouldn't have to like poke you with a stick to get that done. But sometimes we do, because they don't even understand the importance of it, because they're, you know, how they get educated. There's very little time. I mean, you think of all the diseases in the world that they have to be on top of. This is just one. And so what I'm seeing and hearing from people around the world is that more families are coming forward, educating what they've learned and sharing with the doctors. And most doctors are very appreciative of that information. You know, some are skeptical and don't like, you know, don't Google it, you know, because there's a lot of misinformation, but they want resources. They want to be more knowledgeable, because this isn't going away and it is increasing. And, you know, as we push for earlier diagnosis, we're going to see more and more of it. So the knowledge base has to grow within all of us, you know, not just the doctors and the professionals, but us as individuals and families and the general public as well on that. So, so Steve, that was kind of a tag along, you know, comment on the disease process and things like that. Was there another topic that you had in mind as well? This was, that was great though, that we got to dive into that.
Well, I'm good so far. The Truthful had something she wanted to bring up. We can piggyback on that.
Okay. True. Anything that's sticking out to you or that you're hearing, you know, just through the groups that you're involved in? I know a lot of times things just bubble to the top, you know, with needs that people have or concerns that they are, that they're struggling with at all.
I'm not able to connect things enough to do that.
Okay. And that's fine. Well, let's talk about maybe some products or tools or ways that you have adapted that we could share with the public. Steve, are there any things that you use? Like some people are really tapping into Surrey or some have smartwatches. It all depends on where they're at in the mode of their disease. Others say, no, my partner reminds me at X amount of times and this works good. Or I lay my clothes out the night before in the order I need to put them on. So, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of different things that people adjust to live more fully with dementia.
Well, two things really quick. One is exercise. I believe the number one medication, because there is no pill out there. I mean, presently, I think there's five, maybe six pills for dementia, different types, but they only decrease the symptoms by about 6 months. So again, there is no way to stop, prevent, or cure. When you hear about these new drugs are out there, again, they do not stop it, prevent it, or cure. They may delay it by a few months is all that medicine really does. But again, somebody getting 6-7 extra months of life or connection with the family is very important. So I just want to make sure. But I believe exercise is the number one medication out there, that natural oxygen rush to the brain. There's no way, there's nothing better. There's no way to get it except for getting exercise. And I always tell people, do your age. Well, I talked to a lot of people in their 30s, their 50s, their 70s. I got a bad hip. I got this. Well, there's water aerobics. You can't fall in water aerobics. You get in 4 feet of water. You can do your exercise. You really can't fall or whatever. So do your age. Do what your body can take. You know, you can't do what you did when you were in your 20s. Don't think, well, I used to run the marathon. I used to do. Well, no, you're 50 now. You're 60 now. You're 70 now. Start by, instead of your wife or your spouse going out to get the mail, why don't you go? Because it's halfway down the block. Why don't you go get the mail? Why don't you help go take the dog for a walk? Why don't you do these things too? So there's small steps to get there. But again, if you can get up to that aerobic type exercise where you get your heart really pumping and you can do that for at least 20 minutes a day, every day. There's one guy in our group, Vinny, I believe his name is. And I think Vinny's in his 70s and plays pickleball every day. every single day. The guy plays pickleball. It's a newer sport that's really come out, but that's something he does all the time. So that's my biggest one is exercise. And then the next on a resource that you were talking about, resources, I'm one of the founding members and currently the vice president of the National Council of Dementia Minds. You can look at our website, National Council of Dementia Minds. Also a nickname is just Dementia Minds Groups. I was just on a call right before this one where we came out with a finding that we've been working on for about a year or so about what people are looking for within the first year of being diagnosed, what they didn't get, what they wish they got. We actually have some people within the group that have dementia that were neurologists. That, so they're on the other side of the desk. So this is a report that we worked on that, again, if you go to our website, you can type in your information and you can actually, it's on a hard copy. We showed a video just right before this call that I was on and stuff. So that's a great resource too, because when I was first diagnosed, what I wanted to do is meet other people like me, but also people that were 5, 10, 15 years out. Why? Because I wanted to know how to get to 5, 10, 15 years out. And it's not luck of the draw. It's a process. I used to say that at work. The reason you're very successful is you've got a process, which means you can repeat that process over and over again to be successful. So I wanted to find people, like I said, 5, 10, 15 years, find out what their process is. What are they doing? What are they doing differently? It's funny when I was first diagnosed and I was asking people, hey, what kind of supplements do you take or whatever? What do you mean, like a Flintstone vitamin? I go, no, like you don't take a B12 or lion's mane or CoQ10 or some of these things. They're like, no, should I? And so then I started educating people too about, certain things that can be helpful for your body at the same time.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I like that approach of the first couple of years because you are so lost. And if you can pull people out of that normal depression and anger stage, which is common with any common, chronic illness, dementia or something else, that's massively huge. I also loved when you talked about exercise because I don't think people understand the importance of getting the oxygen to the brain and getting that circulation in the body going, because, the more types of health issues you have, the more difficult it's going to be. And one of the things that comes up, I know, on our dementia chats is even when you have other health issues, I don't care if it's diabetes or depression or heart disease or whatever, dementia always gets blamed for any new symptoms. I mean, that's the first thing everybody says. It's like, oh, it's your dementia. And it's like, it's not always the dementia, And so it can make things a little bit more difficult for people to be able to move forward with in a solid direction. The other thing, you guys do is you have a speakers bureau too, if I'm not mistaken, with Dementia Minds. Is that correct?
Yes, we have several different groups on Dementia Minds, and we have new groups forming all the time. We have the original Dementia Minds group. We've got a Black Dementia Minds group. We've got a doctors group. We've got an LGBTQ group. We've got a Hispanic group. We've got all kinds of different groups. We've got a men's group only. They're forming a women's group presently and other groups as it comes along. So the nice thing is you can find people that look like you, sound like you. We have people that have your disease. People are like, well, I have frontal temporal lobe dementia. Well, there's like six of us. I mean, on our, it's funny because on our founding board of the eight of us that originated the National Council of Dementia Minds, only one person had Alzheimer's. The other seven of us had different types of dementia, just to show you that there are different types of dementia. And that's the hardest thing was people are trying to find people with Lewy body and they want to ask them, hey, you've had Lewy body for 5 years. Because talking to somebody with Lewy bodies like you have is a different conversation than them talking to me with CTE dementia. I can relate to some of the similarities, but there are also differences at the same time. So it's important to find somebody. If you have Lewy body, you want to talk to another Lewy body person or group so that you don't feel like, geez, I'm the only one that has Lewy body dementia. Nobody knows what Lewy is and whatnot. We even have a friend that has a button that says, ask me about Louis, like it's a person. Like, who's this Louis? Oh, well, gives me a chance to kind of share Louis body dementia.
Yep, that's smart. Oh, the other thing I wanted to mention that you had talked about, because I just thought it ironic when you had said you've got a couple of neurologists that are now dealing with this, and they were finding the holes that were missing. It's kind of like so many people in senior housing and stuff. They're giving out information on how to deal with dementia, and then it hits them and go, oh my gosh, I was doing this all wrong. They need this and they need this and they need this. And you don't know until you've really lived it. And so that's why I think it's so important to have conversations like these, because we don't have to go through it if we listen to what other people are saying. But in this day and age, a lot of times we don't listen well, we don't take that time to do that, and that's really critical. I just did a interview the other day, and I loved this, and it was for GrandPad. And GrandPad is a is it's an iPad, but it doesn't you don't use Wi-Fi. It has big buttons. You can text, you can video call. It's got entertainment, all kinds of stuff on it. But one of the best things that I loved about it is they have what they call grand advisors. And they're seniors that say, hey, let's do something that is actually going to work for us. I know your techie guys are probably in their 20s and 30s, and they're going to do what works for them, and it's really cool, but it doesn't work for us in our 70s, 80s, 90s. They have, I think, one person that was a grand advisor who was 100, and I think they said 16, but they've had a couple of people over 100 years old, and they're getting this grand wisdom from them in terms of designing things that really work. And even one of the things that they talked about was, they didn't want, if they needed support, they didn't want to have to push one for this, push two for that. They wanted a live person, but they listened even further and said, I can't understand somebody in a foreign language. And so they have someone with a similar accent for the area that they're living in. So it's easier to understand. And I thought, brilliant, because you don't hear that many companies going to that into that depth that is just critical for ease of process. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, like there's a phrase that we use, was kind of two different phrases, but it's very similar. Nothing about us without us, or nothing about me without me. Too many times decisions are being made about dementia, Alzheimer's, or whatever, and they've never even gone to the people living with the disease to ask, hey, does this make sense? Does this work? There's so many organizations out there, like again, Alzheimer's Association just happens to be a big name front and center. I was very fortunate in California when I lived there. The California board always has somebody living with dementia on the board. I was actually on the board, and typically it's a 1 year term, but things were going so well, and I was very interactive and proactive or not. I actually stayed on it for 3 years, and then when I moved from Ida from California to Idaho, somebody else was asked to go on the board. So the nice thing about that, the California Alzheimer's Association for I think the last 8, maybe 10 years has always had somebody on the one or two people, actually two people on the board. Whereas when I moved here to Idaho, they've never had somebody with dementia on the board. So they wanted, as soon as I moved there, oh, Stephen, you're going to get on the board. And I'm like, whoa, slow your roll. I know there's a commitment of X, Y, or Z to be on the board. I've got to let me get my feet wet, get some connections here or whatnot before I look at doing something like that. But I think it's very important that, again, it's nothing about us without us. Same thing when you're talking to your neurologist, and the neurologist is just talking to the caregiver the whole day. Well, how is Stephen doing, Tracy? And how is he responding? And this and that. It's important to get her opinion because the neurologist may ask me, well, Stephen, how are things going? I'm saying, well, I think things are going pretty well, da 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 da. Then the caregiver's going, well, actually, he's forgetting this and he can't smell anymore. He didn't mention that to you. He can't do this or other things. So again, it's important to keep us involved at the same time and make us part of that conversation and the decision making too, that we're involved in that.
Yeah, that's extremely important. I had one person in my support group who fired their financial planner after decades of working with them, because he would bring his wife in and no eye contact, no hello, how you doing? And he said one meeting, he said, I was so mad and just downright angry and frustrated and hurt that on the disrespect, because she knew she was being left out, you know, even though she had progressed in her disease. And the guy was shocked that he's like, but, you know, we've worked together. And he's like, if you can't understand this basic, you know, human dignity thing, you know, you're not just hurting her, you're hurting me too. And people really need to understand that. We also have to watch closely too. Again, this is my skeptic side that comes out. A lot of times we will have that token person on the board and they're there.
You said the right word. Sometimes there is a token person. And I was actually on one of those boards that got me super frustrated. I catch up. With my dementia, or when I hear, think something, it comes out and I need to like slow down and wait my turn, but I tend to forget things. So they jump out. So I'm sorry I jumped in, but I want to respond to that token in a minute.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead and do that. That's we jump on open mic, so that's fine.
Very example, token situation. I was on the California Board for Elderly. That's not the proper name. I can't remember the exact name, but basically it was for the California State, for the State of California Board of Elderly something, with a focus on dementia. Well, I was on the board and another person, because there was always two people on the board with dementia, and that phase was, again, also for a year, and they rotated somebody in. But it was very common that when the other gentleman made a comment, or I made a comment, they would say, thank you, Stephen, thank you, Les, and they would move along. Somebody else would make a comment, and they would say, well, Karen, from what you were saying, and then they would, the conversation within the 30 people on the board would start talking about what Karen just said and relate, and people would piggyback on it, whereas they were giving us the polite phrase, like I would say something like, oh, thank you, Stephen. Not like, that was really great that you talked about that, or da-da-da-da-da, and somebody else would feed off of that. So, you know, at the end, I'm thinking, like you said, oh, they want to say they have two people on the board. They have their two token seats. They didn't take any of our opinions. They didn't value our opinion. Again, we are just token people on the board.
And I've seen it where they don't even show up in the meeting minutes. I mean, they'll show up that they're there, but like a comment or something, it's not even documented. And so that, you know, if you're going to do it seriously and be inclusive, because boy, you are missing out on a lot by not listening and not, you know, opening up your mind to go, gosh, we never thought of that. You know, can you explain more about that? And that's one of the reasons, I mean, I stepped into this space was because I felt ignored as a care partner. You know, they kind of listened to you, but it was like, choo, choo, you know, in one ear, out the other. And my mom wasn't even part of the conversation. And I just thought, this is asinine that they are making these decisions and they're peeking in the windows and not knocking on the door, having a conversation to find out what really, truly is going on. And that's why I love my job, you know, to be able to hear from others, like with Dementia Chats that True is part of. I learn so much every single time we do one of those. Every single time. And, you know, with the radio show, we're inclusive of everybody at all ages and stages all around the world, because I don't think we can make sustainable change if we don't work together, because there's this ripple effect that we have on one another. And to ignore that is just absolutely silly. Go ahead, Stephen.
Because we have the true lived experiences. A lot of these people are talking as experts when in fact, they can't be an expert of something that they've never done, used, taste, been a part of. I use this as an example all the time, whether it's a good example or not. I kind of like the example. If I was a woman and I was pregnant and I had a choice between two doctors, a male doctor or a female doctor who's had four babies, my choice between these two doctors, I would go with a female doctor that's had four babies. Why? She really knows what a contraction feels like. She really knows what morning sickness feels like. She really knows these things. So that's the same thing when you're talking with people and you have that opportunity to get lived experiences from people living with the disease. It's so powerful to listen to us. And typically we do better in groups. So if I'm get invited to speak someplace and it's just by myself, I always say, well, I've got a friend that has dementia too. Can we get them on? Because I get sometimes very difficult to be the lead person and doing all the talking where somebody else talks, we can feed off each other or whatnot. It works better that way. But I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. So much is trying to bounce around in my brain right now.
Well, but it also gives people different perspectives because the two of you aren't always going to agree. You're going to have different ways to approach maybe the same problem. Just like before you had dementia, when you would meet with people, everybody would come together with their ideas. Everybody has a little different approach. That doesn't change when you have dementia, but yet people think that it's supposed to because, well, that'll be easier if, you just have one path for us to follow. That'll make it easier for us. Well, it's not about us. It's about each of you and how do we make your lives better. And that in the trenches approach, I think to me, and I've thought this all along, I think people are screaming for it because it's nice to have book smarts. But I need to know how to survive the day. I need to know how to bring ease and comfort. I need to know how to find joy. I need to know even how to vent when things aren't going right or where to look. Where can I go for support? Those are life-enhancing skills where the book smarts and the statistics, it'll give you knowledge. I don't know if I would say it's life-enhancing though. And to me, that's the difference with that. And you guys might argue with my perceptions, on those. So, and we're free to do that here. So, Drew, any comments on any of this we've been talking about?
Well, truthfully, I'm not able to follow the last part of it, but you asked about strategies, and I can't carry them in my brain anymore. I don't remember what all I'm glad I've gotten them written in my blog on that page for strategies and
Yep.
systems.
And I actually, you had asked me if I could post your blog. I have it on Alzheimer's Speaks. If they go to the blog tab underneath, I think there's like nine different blog posts. And then right underneath that, is a link to your blog because your blog is filled with wonderful articles and strategies of not just your thoughts, but others that you've talked with over the years. So, please, you can go again, you can go to alzheimerspeaks.com, go to the blog tab, and then just scroll down to the bottom and you'll see Truthful's, icon for her graphic to go to the blog there. But it's wonderful, absolutely wonderful.
And again, just to piggyback on, like she was talking about her different strategies that she has on her blogs, and you're asking about strategies. Again, having more people kind of helps trigger our memories and stuff. I was thinking about that earlier and then forgot about it until it got brought up again. My cell phone is a huge strategy of mine. I call it my second brain. First of all, my trigger to my memory is photos. So I take hundreds of photos, when we travel or whatnot. I'll forget a trip until my wife says, she'll start talking about Africa or wherever we've been, and I'll go through my photos and it'll trigger my memory, and then I can get in that conversation a little bit better. But this helps keep me on track for all my doctor's appointments. Typically, if I'm at the dentist, they all know that I have dementia. It's in my file and stuff. So when I check out, they know it takes me a little bit of time because I'll put in, okay, teeth cleaning in 3 months, and I'll do a 2 day reminder, 1 day reminder, 1 hour reminder, 30 minute reminder, because I can still get to the place in 30 minutes. So I've got all these reminders on my phone. So I always say, if it's not on my phone, it's not going to happen. So if someone tells me something, I say, wait, I need to put it in my phone, but slow down. I can only get 1 day at a time. It's like my wife, she substitute teaches every once in a while. And again, I wasn't putting some of those things on my phone. All of a sudden, I'd wake up in the morning. She happened to have snuck out nice and quiet because she had an early class she had to go teach. I rolled over, like, where's my wife? I have no idea where she's at. Well, I could go to my phone sometimes, like, oh, she's substitute teaching today. That's right. There's my reminder, because otherwise, if it's not in my phone, I'm like, where are you at? I get a little bit nervous about it. And because of that, nervous where we're at, this is something I recommend to people with children or with people with dementia. It's called, let me see if I can, fuzz my background so it's called Life 360. Where is it? It's this one right here, the purpley one.
Okay.
Life 360 is a free app. You can click on it and it'll tell me exactly where I'm at and exactly where my wife's at. So I used to always have to check in with my wife. I'm at the gym. I'm coming home from the gym. I'm going to stop at the store. I'm going to get a coffee. I'm going to do something. So I was always having to text everywhere I got, where I was going, where I was stopping. I don't have to do that anymore. My wife wants to know if I went to the gym. Like, well, he's normally there an hour and a half. It's been 2 hours. Either he's talking too much to friends or where is he? The nice thing is she just goes on this Life 360. She opens it up and says, oh, I can see he's driving. He's on his way home. Because she does want to try and call me while I'm driving. Because that's a big distraction for me. I got my phone up there for hands-free or whatnot. But this is a great resource for people too. Life 360. It's a free app. We actually used it with our children when they were younger and they got their phones because we could keep track of them. But we actually said, well, so that you can keep track of dad, we want you to be on this too. Well, we were using it both directions. They could see us, but we could also see where our kids were too at the same time.
Yeah, that's nice. All those little tips and tricks are really helpful. Go ahead, True.
I can't use the iPhone anymore because my tremors are too bad to hit buttons. But I really use my iPad a lot.
Well, and that's wonderful. That's like with the grandpad that I was telling you. You can, they have pictures for who you're going to call, you know. So it doesn't have the name; it'll have the picture, and they're nice big buttons. But you can use voice programming. So you could text somebody, or you could email somebody, or you could call somebody using your voice instead, which is, you know, all of those little variables are they're just helpful in so many ways. I know there are people that use Siri, but then some people don't like Siri because Siri will talk to them when they don't really want to talk to Siri too. She'll pop up and go, how can I help you, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, they randomly start talking to it. Happens. My wife and I be watching TV, next thing that Alexa behind us will start saying something. We're like, they must have heard something on TV that triggered it to turn it on or whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this has been a great conversation. I appreciate both of you. Oh, go ahead, True.
And as far as where he is, when he leaves, he opens this up and leaves it on my keyboard. So, because I don't remember, you know. We've even got one for the front yard and the backyard and stuff like that. Because I don't, he can tell me and it's gone within a couple minutes. So I don't know when somebody will be back. And it's very unsettling to not know when someone will be here.
Yeah.
So we use this.
Okay. Well, and nice. One of the common scenarios that I hear from pretty much everybody I talk to is when they're stressed out, you know, when they're feeling anxious, their symptoms increase. So we want to keep that down. We want to be able to figure out different adaptions, and what works for Steve might not work for True, which might not work for me. And that's okay. It's not about judging, like, no, you have to use what I use. It's like, use what's going to work for you and your family and get on with it, so that you can embrace and live life as well as possible with that.
Well, besides that, workarounds, by the nature of being a workaround, they're temporary.
Exactly.
They aren't permanent. Mm-hmm. And I've gone through a lot of workarounds that no longer work.
But the good thing is what I love with all you guys is you share them with others. So even if they don't work for you anymore, you're like, oh, this is what I used to do. And
yeah.
And that gives somebody else an idea. So, you know, like Steve, you had said, I want to be around people that have a similar diagnosis and I can learn from them, and they're kind of in the same thing, but I want people that are further along because they're full of knowledge and great ideas and can help me plan better for the disease, you know, to see what happens. I mean, and what we're told at the doctor's office isn't always accurate. You know, when my mom got diagnosed, you know, she was told 5 to 7 years. She lived 30, you know, and she had a pretty good life until the last three. The last three were tough. But 30 years is a long time. And I think being purposeful, being able to be engaged in your community with your family, I think all of those things really matter as well.
And quality of life is still very important to us.
What? Yeah. Yeah.
Quality of life is very important. That's a big phrase I use all the time. You know, it's about quality of life. I want to have quality of life.
Exactly.
I have one last idea. I know we're probably up on the hour, but I just wrote it down because this is the newest thing I'm trying to share with a lot of people is that I know this is kind of going to be a weird topic, but I know as I progress and my wife has to be more than a care giver and has to take care of, you know, bathing and things like that. I always told her that, you know, I never wanted her to have to wipe my butt. So what I've done here about, I think about 6 months ago, I got bidets. And I put them on both of our toilets in our bathroom. And the nice thing about that is I'm early enough in my diagnosis and my connection that I can use that bidet so that there's no way you can give somebody in late stage dementia, have them sit down for the very first time and do a bidet. It's going to scare them. They're going to jump out. Well, I'm hoping that I'm going to have years of experiences with that. So when the time comes, my wife will say, oh, are you done on the toilet? She'll just sit next to me and push the little button next to me that I mean, it doesn't blow my butt or whatever, but it does clean me up that way. Because I thought to myself, I want to try and make life easier for my wife down the road. But it's not just for people with dementia. My mother-in-law broke her hip. My sister's is now caring for her mother-in-law. And she had some problems. And she was talking about, oh, I got to wipe her butt. And this, and I go, get a bidet. She goes, what? I said, get them on Amazon. The one that I bought was under $30. So it's not like there are $300 ones, all electric with that blow air, like a, you know, like a blow dryer or whatever. Mine's very basic that does the water or whatever. But, and then she thanked me after. She was, oh my God, it's, you know, it's so much easier. I said, yep. A bidet changes a lot of things down the road. So I'm trying to make it easier for my wife down the road. And the longer I have it, there's going to be less surprises, you know, if I sit down and the button gets pushed for me later on.
You know, interesting. You said that on Conscious Caring with L&L, a show that I do with Lance Slatton. We did a whole thing on staffing issues and resolutions. And one of the resolutions was actually the bidet, because that whole process of cleaning somebody up, you know, it's not a job that the patient wants or the person caring for them wants to do, you know, and it's very time consuming and it can change everybody's day in a heartbeat. Same with if you have the right type of adults, depends or whatever you want to call them, briefs, mm-hmm. You know, if they don't leak and you're not changing the bed and cleaning up the floor and having to throw somebody in the shower every time. I mean, that's hours worth of work that you get back in your life. So these things are really, really smart to look at and can make a huge, huge difference. But you're right, especially with a bidet, you know, they'll jump off the toilet and the whole room's going to get sprayed, you know, it's going to be a big mess. So it makes a lot of sense. So thank you for sharing that. Thank you both for your time. This was a great conversation and I can't wait to share it with the world. So appreciate all you are doing to help us care better for those living with dementia.
Thank you for the time and opportunity to speak today. Nice seeing you again, Truthful.
You too.
Bye now.
Thanks, Lori.
Thank you. So in wrapping up, again, I just want to thank everybody. And I always ask our audience to be a giver of hope. Like, click, and share. You don't know who in your sphere of influence needs this information, so make it easy for them. Pass it along and become part of our community. Appreciate you all. Bye now. I also want to introduce you all to QBlocks. They have been absolutely excellent to deal with. They have been in business for 18 years and they serve the globe. I can't say enough good things about this company. I've had a lot of bad experiences. I don't know about you with tech companies. They have made a very complicated process very easy. And their staff is so kind, so polite, so respectful to work with. And You know, when I am frustrated and ready to pull my hair out, they just smile and tell me everything's going to be okay. And they really are just on top of the communication, which alleviates so much stress as an owner when you're dealing with tech issues. You can get a 10% discount. Visit them at QBlocks, that's QBlocks.com. Or you can email them at letstalk@qblocks.com. For that 10% discount, just put Lori, L-O-R-I, in the inquiry form. And again, I don't think you'll be disappointed. I surely haven't been. I can't rave enough about this company. And that's kind of rare these days.
It's time to rethink, renew, and reimagine retirement. Hey, everybody. Jared Sylvester here, host of Retire Repurposed. Now, this podcast is about the non-financial parts of retirement, which many times can be even more challenging than the financial. We believe retirement is not the end, rather the beginning of what could be the most impactful, purposeful, and fulfilling season of a person's life. So don't retire. Become repurposed. To listen now, search Retire Repurposed on your favorite podcast platform, Senior Resource, or Life Audio.